Let's see. So. Is there something that you want me to explain? Is there something that you want to know? You know all. You know everything already. Oh, that's great. So I don't have to give a talk.
Still working.
You still have enough interest? It's still a lot of fun to see the kilesas at work and to go against them or to bring them up. That's good. That's very, very hard. Two things are very helpful in our practice. A lot of anger that we can redirect towards the kilesas instead of directing it towards other people and situations. So if a lot of anger comes up, we direct it towards the kilesas that produce the anger in our heart. Or another very helpful and fast way is if we have a lot of interest, if you just want to understand. That's fast. If you just don't want to understand, if you just are more or less deluded, then it's a very slow way. Then we have to work on each kind of should I do that? Should I don't do it? You know, why isn't it bringing any results? You know, I've done it now for 3 times and it still doesn't get any results. I mean, that is a very, very slow way of practice. Maybe I should change, you know, maybe I should change my sitting position, maybe I should change my walking position. This is very slow. I mean, just asking yourself, what's up? Okay, why do I feel bored? Where is the boredom in my heart? What am I bored with my practice? Okay, then it must be the kilesa. Okay, let's approve them. That's fast. But if we give in to our desperation, if we give in to our boredom, if we give in to our disinterest, I mean, then it will be very, very hard, very, very difficult. We have to do it not only 10 times, but maybe 1,000 times. Just the same thing, just to get any result. A person who is really interested and is very observant of what is coming up, he just need to make the experiment 2 or 3 times. And then he understands. But because we are not really willing to observe, we're not really willing, you know, to have enough sati on what is going on. That's why we don't catch it. I mean, the only shortcut in our practice is sati. If you have a lot of sati, if we have a lot of awareness of what is going on, what is coming in our contact with our citta, how are we reacting, why are we reacting, then, I mean, we understand very quickly. That's why the Lord Buddha said, you know, the person who has sati for 7 days and 7 nights, after that 7 days and 7 nights, he can reach enlightenment. If your sati is not strong enough, it takes 7 weeks or 7 months or 7 lifetimes, or 7 years. Depending on the strength of sati. So it, you know, I always emphasize sati, this awareness, this really, this cool awareness, this is just observes and notes what is going on. Okay, there's a memory. Not saying I memorize this or that. There's a memory, there's a thought, there's a feeling. That is this cool or this objective observer. And then everything is fine. I mean, the moment we say there's a problem, okay, we have a handle for it to tackle. If we say I'm in a problem, I mean, there's no way that we can handle it. I'm in a bad mood, you know, so that's it, that's finished. Our practice is finished. I have doubts. Practice is finished. But if you see, there is doubt. So, okay, what are doubts? Oh, doubts are made out of thoughts, made out of sanya, that means memory. Okay, let's differentiate. So what part is in sanya? What part is thought? And then suddenly this doubt just disappears, just like anything. Just the same way, you know, when we investigate pain. If we do it in the correct way, I mean, it just vanished. Just, you know, I just felt, you know, a lot of pain. You know? And then I put my interest on the pain. So, what is pain? What is actually pain? Okay. Go with my attention, go to that point where I feel that pain, you know, and then I just ask a few questions. Where is the pain in the muscles? Where is it in the skin? Or is it in the bones? Huh? Where is it? And is the pain one with the bones, or is the pain one with the muscles? Huh? If it's like that, if I come to the conclusion the pain is and the muscles are one and the same thing, I mean, I must be constantly into pain. Just by investigating it like this, I mean, just the pain will disappear. I mean, it will just reduce. Because the pain is not in the muscles, and it's not in the bone, it's not in the flesh, and it's not in the sinews, and it's not in the skin. It's somewhere else. It comes from somewhere else. And that's what we have to find out for ourselves. You know? Even if we hear it, you know, we might believe it or we might not believe it, but still, you know, it's not our knowledge. It's not our wisdom. It's the wisdom of somebody else. And this doesn't help us. Maybe it helps us in one way, okay, that we want to try to get the same experience. Okay, that's good. Okay. So sit. Sit for 4 hours until pain is coming. A really strong coming. Huh? Okay, sit and observe it. Observe it. I mean, who's the one who is observing all this? He cannot be the pain. The pain doesn't know it's pain. The muscles don't know it's muscles. Well, who is defining what is muscle, what is pain, what is skin, what is sinews, what is bone? What is mucus, what is blood? Who is defining that? Who is seeing that? I mean, the eyes don't see trees. The ears don't hear chickens. So who is the one? Who is this faculty, you know, that knows all these things? Who is that faculty that observes all these things? Just retreat to this faculty, you know, and everything will be very cool. Then you just be back in your theater seat, you know, and watch a on stage play. And as long as you watch your on stage play, you don't get hit. The moment, you know, you think, you know, you must change the play, that's where you get hit. Because then you're suddenly on the stage and want to change the characters, how the characters are reacting. That's where you get hit. That's where pain comes in. That's where doubt comes in. Because you want to change something. But this observant nature of our citta is just cool. It just observes what is going on. It observes, okay, there's a memory coming in, there's a feeling coming in, attached with the memory is a feeling, attached with the thought is a feeling. That feeling, you know, triggers another thought or triggers another memory in within. When within 1 second we have an emotion. Okay. Now I understand how emotions are born. Please. I thought you were too afraid, you were too much under pressure.
No.
Oh, something good for my teeth. Suicide. And he was a monk. Yeah, but he was a monk before. Yeah, but he didn't jump in the race. Actually, he's quite fine now. He's back to normal now. So you have to give it another day. If it's food, and if I fast, then you can give it to me in the morning after the meal. But if it's just medicine, then you can give it. Is that medicine?
Depends.
I don't mean in the Western sense, but in the Buddhist sense.
I heard in Thailand, cheese is also medicine.
Well, it's, yes, in the Western.
From outside, so to speak. But I've a little doubt, maybe, in this point. So I ask if there's no wish, at least in the background, that things might be different, or no wish that my state of consciousness, which I'm in now, should change to the better, maybe. And there's a knowledge of there are wholesome states of mind, there are unwholesome states of mind, and wholesome and unwholesome. I want to define, like the Buddha defined it, good for you on the path to liberation. This is wholesome and unwholesome. Some are better for you, you can go on, others tear you back and keep you back and so on. And so isn't it, if you observe that at the same time your mind making a judgment, is it wholesome or not wholesome? And then there may be, or not, just a question, There is a will of removing the unwholesome states, and there's a will to keep the wholesome states.
That sounds interesting. So where's the problem?
Well, the problem is just observing is observing, not nothing more.
Yes. So, what comes with observing? No, I don't ask you. I'm asking you, but I don't expect an answer. So where do you think the problem lies? I mean, when I say, of course, you know, our general guidance, when you talk about our general guidance, you're completely right. We should investigate our actions if they lead to wholesome states of mind or unwholesome states of mind. If we know that an action or that a thought or that some words that bubble out of our mouth most of the time unconsciously lead to unwholesome states of mind, then we should let them go. There is no question about this. I wasn't talking about this. I was talking about the investigative nature of the chitta. That is one thing. I mean, when we look at the path of practice that leads to the end of dukkha, There are three columns that are made out of, or this path is made out. The column is sila. I mean, keeping the sila, you know, always keeps us in a wholesome state of mind. The second one is samadhi. I wasn't talking about samadhi. Also, samadhi is going to train this observer. Because we are observing the breath at the tip of the nose. If the breath comes in, and if the breath goes out, if the breath is deep, or if the breath is shallow, or we are observing the Buddha that we installed in our mental repetition as a mental repetition. If the Buddha is fast, or if the Buddha is slow, if the Buddha is deep, or if the Buddha is shallow. So, you get it? Can you think now, the moment we observe, there is something that arises within our citta, and that is exactly what we are trying to get at, and that is the knowing state of our citta. The moment we use thoughts, or judgment, I mean, we don't get to the knowing state of our citta, because then we are in the realm that we always have been. Now, with this observance, I mean, we don't actually have to say that the breath is deep or the breath is shallow. I mean, the observer already knows it. And the observer is the true state of our citta. It's the only thing, when everything else disappears, it's the only thing that remains. But most of us don't know it. And that's where the difficulty lies. And if you don't know the knowing state of our citta, then of course we have to use the guidelines, just like it is described, to get us worry-free. If we are worry-free, then we might actually able to get into samadhi, into the first stage of samadhi, into upacara samadhi, where there are no thoughts. And when there are no thoughts, there is no doubt. There are no emotions. There are no worries. But to get there, that is the difficulty. Because we are not letting go of our thoughts. We don't want to let go of our thoughts because it's the only thing that we know. We don't want to let go of our thoughts and we don't want to let go of our memories. That's why we can't reach the first stage of samadhi. And the first stage of samadhi is only the thoughts and memories, you know, just disappear. And there's only experience. Just like I said in the beginning, you know, this just this cool observer that knows what is going on. And who is not judgmental. I mean, then, we're going to train further on. We're going to train further on to be concentrated on one point. Until the observer and the thing observed become one. What's happening then? If everything becomes just one, I mean everything else has to disappear. And the only thing that remains is our true nature of the citta. Or in other words, in the words of Tenaja Mahapur, it is the preview of Nibbana. Okay, that's fine, that sounds great. I mean all what is lacking is our determination and effort to get there. Because we are not willing, or the Kilesas are not willing to let go of their thoughts because it's their world. I mean, that is very... When we just look at our life is what we think and what we memorize. And what we feel. That's mostly of our life. I mean, the body is part of it and the senses are part of it, but most of it is memory. I mean, constantly we are in thoughts about the past, or we memorize the past, or we imagine the future. So the first thing, the first stage, you know, where we really feel relief, and where we really can find some enjoyment or some peace and happiness, is the first stage of samadhi. It's the upacara samadhi. It's the exa samadhi, as it is called, where we just experience. I mean, you just sit, you know, you're walking like I describe it sometimes, you're walking in the rain and you are in the lightning and you're afraid that the lightning strikes you and you're pissed that the rain is hitting you so hard, and then you find a glass house. I mean, you open the door, you still see the rain, you still see the lightning, but you know you're in a safe place. So it doesn't bother you, it doesn't worry you. You just observe it. Ah, okay, he stroke. The lightning strikes over there, or the rain hits there. But you're safe. I mean, the moment you open the door and get out, I mean, I described it before, the moment you want to change something, or you think about the play that is going on the stage, you're in it, and the rain hits you again. And the lightning strikes and makes you afraid. But in the stage of Upacara Samadhi, there is no fear, there are no worries, there are no doubts, nothing of this. That's why it's called that's why it is a very happy or very peaceful state of mind. And without that, I mean, we can't even start with our investigation. If our mind is not quiet, if our mind is wild and running around, I mean, how can we stay on one object? If you can't stay on our object of the breath, you know, be it the breath or be it the Buddha. I mean, for at least 10 minutes without the mind wandering off, I mean, how can we even investigate properly? How can we even see results? I mean, the observer that I described before, it's just like the... I have to fight against this mess. It is just like a physicist who watches an experiment and doesn't know what is coming out. He doesn't know the outcome. He might have some views or opinions about the outcome, but he doesn't know. I mean, if he doesn't, for every second of the experiment, observe this experiment, he will not understand what is going on. I mean, if the experiment takes on for, let's say, for 2 hours, and he gets hungry and turns around, you know, eats something, I mean, he has to start the experiment from the start, because he missed the part. Or if he turns around and wants something to drink, it's the same thing. I mean, in just this very moment, you know, the things can happen. So he misses the experience. So he doesn't understand what is going on. So he has to start all over again. And that's what we normally do. We always start all over again. Okay, let's see the pain. Let's see the pain. Let's stay with the pain. And now something is hitting us. Some doubt or some, you know, some thoughts or some memory. And then we have to start it all over again. Until we come to this point, until we realize that if we have enough sati, you know, we can sit through pain without any problem. But if our sati, you know, just drops off for a second, for a millisecond, it's gone. You have to start the experiment again. And that, of course, you know, relates to the statement of the Lord Buddha, who has sati for seven days and seven nights. He can reach enlightenment after that. So sati is the important thing. The observer, you know, the observer who doesn't get caught up in what is going on and just clearly observe, you know, each element, each thing that occurs, each thing that arises and ceases and triggers one and the other thing, he will understand. But of course, if his mindfulness or if his sati, you know, lacks just one moment, he just doesn't have a clue. I mean, he has a lot of assumptions, but these are not the thing. I mean, we do something and we come out with an assumption, that's right or that's wrong, but that is still an assumption. An assumption is an assumption, it's not knowing. The moment you ask, you're fixed on your assumption that you make from your practice. I mean, just question it. Question it a little bit hard. If you made it often, you have to question it pretty hard, and then you will see it falls, it shakes. And then you know it just was an assumption, it wasn't the truth. Because the truth, the knowingness, or the knowing that arises just by observing, I mean, you can't question it. There's no way. I mean, whatever other people say, it's as you know that you have experienced it. That's why I call, you know, the knowledge that arises through this kind of process is the knowledge of a person who grabs into the fire and burns his hand. I mean, he just rejects automatically. I mean, you don't have to tell the hand to go away. I mean, and then people tell him and say the fire is cold or the fire is warm, and you don't burn your hand if you put it in the fire, and you know it's all stupid. Because you have experienced it for yourself. Of course, if somebody else tells you about the experience when you grab in the fire, you burn your hand, I mean, that is the other person's experience and it's the other person's wisdom, but it's not your wisdom. So that's why the whole path of the practice is the path of following the pointers or following the signs of that the Lord Buddha gave us. If you do this, you will experience this. I mean, if you said it, you know, we will. But if you are not determined enough and if you give up halfway, or if you only do it half-heartedly, I mean, we just get a half-hearted result. And most of us just do it 10%, so they get the results, yeah. They're really minor results. But if you do it full-heartedly, if you completely put our interest into it, whoops, you know, it vanishes immediately. Each mountain, you know, that we think that we have to climb and that we are afraid to climb, the moment we are determined to climb it, it just vanishes. I mean, it just changes in the curtain of light. There is no mountain anymore. Because the mountain is built up of doubts. It's built out of doubt, it's built out of fear, it's built out of a lot of things. The moment we are determined, you know, to let everything go, yeah? We just climb it, you know, no matter what happens. I mean, this mountain just disappears. But of course, that's why I said, you know, people who are very angry or people who are and directing anger towards Achilles, you know, are going a very fast path. Or people who are very interested, you know, in just seeing, you know, just trying to understand what is going on. I mean, they are all on the fast track. And every else, you know, who has, who doesn't see clearly, who has his doubt, who has his, oh, maybe this doesn't work for me. There's nothing that doesn't work for you, everything works for you. Well, you just have to fill it out to the end. You have to let the experiment go to the end, and then you will see the results of it for yourself. I mean, the path of practice is the path of personal practice. It's not the path of gaining some knowledge from other people. I mean, the knowledge of other people is still the knowledge of other people. It's not our own knowledge. And we can't make it to our own knowledge. It's just like, you know, when you think about a rich person, oh, he has a lot of money. What can he all do? What could I do if I had this kind of money? It's still his money, so you can't do a thing. But we dream about it, no? Don't we? I mean, if I'm in this state, you know, what can I do? If I'm in that state, what can I do? Oh, isn't it wonderful when I'm finished, you know? I'm a monk when I'm finished with my practice. Okay, I can go back to Germany, you know, and be a big ashram. Teach this or teach that, or go and travel all over the world. And I mean, the Kalesas constantly tell us. What they don't tell us, that the moment, you know, we gained enlightenment, our self is gone, so there's nobody who wants anything anymore. There's nobody who wants to build up a monastery. There's nobody who wants to travel to this place or to that place. They don't tell that. They just tell us, you know, if you get enlightened, you can do all these things. And then instead of getting enlightened, we think about all these things that we can do when we are. It's just like, you know, it's just like the dream when we see a rich person and then we think about what we could do with so much money. Of course, there are a lot of things to do. But the thing just goes away, you know. The conceit just goes away. It will fall away on our path to practice. But that doesn't mean that we can now think, you know, there is no self. So, nobody is doing something and nobody is going to reap the fruits of his doing. Now, that's wrong thinking, because you are the ones who still experience, you know, dukkha vedana. Be it bodily dukkha vedana or be it mental dukkha vedana. And the most pressing things are the mental dukkha-vedana. The mental feelings, the depression, the doubt, the fears, the worries, yeah? I mean, we're constantly in a whirlpool of these things. Never let us out. No, that doesn't work for me, you know. I feel sorry for myself. That's that, you know. Is that a pleasant? If you want to ask, you know, what are wholesome states, that certainly is not a wholesome state. If I doubt this or if I doubt that, ask yourself, is this a wholesome state of mind? And you will see, you will feel it's not wholesome because it's not comfortable. If you're angry, you investigate that state of mind and ask yourself, you know, truly ask yourself, is that a wholesome state of mind? And you will see it's a fiery, burning state of mind. Because you try to get rid of your anger, or you try to direct your anger towards something that is completely innocent. Because the anger arises within your own citta. The same thing with greed. If you want something so desperately, you know, then just ask yourself, is that a wholesome state of mind? And of course, you know, when you're really truly objective, it isn't a wholesome state of mind. It's a very fiery, just the same thing as saying, it's a very fiery state of mind. Ah, interesting. I mean, we can use it in the right way, or we can use it in the wrong way. That is up to us. Whatever the Lord Buddha teaches, and he says it for himself. I mean, the one who picks the, you know, the Dhamma at the wrong end, uses the Dhamma in the wrong way. It's just like picking up a snake at its tail. Of course, it will come back, you know, to us and bite us. But if you pick it up at the head, you know, then we are in charge. So if you use these things in the right way, in the right, you know, whatever he says, if in the right way, I mean, it will be very fruitful for us. If we investigate our states of mind in that way, and then say, okay, that is an unwholesome state of mind. Anger is an unwholesome, so let go of it. What led to the anger? I mean, investigate. What led to the greed? Investigate. And you will come down to only one conclusion if you investigate it properly. There's only one thing that boils all these things up. And that is nothing else than avijja. And that is the owner of our heart, sorry to say, it's still the owner. And whatever we think, whatever we say, whatever we do, I mean, it's the outflows of kilesa. It's the outflows of avijja. Except when we really, for the first 2 minutes, determine to sit down and practice. Then it's dhamma. And then 2 minutes later, you know, then the kilesa speaks and says, oh, maybe this place is not good. Maybe that is not good. Maybe that is not good. Maybe I should go somewhere else. Okay, that's the end of the rule of dhamma. Took only for 2 minutes, or 1 minute, or maybe 10 minutes, or maybe an hour, or maybe 2 hours. Where the Dhamma actually was in control. I mean, never forget, there are two souls that are within our chest, right? Just like Goethe said, right? I mean, there are two things in our citta. One is thing, is avijja, and one thing is the Dhamma. And because, you know, when we start our practice, of course, avijja is mostly the only... most of the time, the only owner of our citta. So whatever is done in the form of the kilesa. It's the result of avijja, and will have its karma coming with it. There are only few times when the Dhamma is in charge of our heart. Don't even think, or regard the five khandhas. The five khandhas are just five khandhas. They have nothing to do with avijja, and they have nothing to do with Dhamma. It is just a toolbox that either Dhamma can use or avijja can use. Never forget that. I mean, memories can be used by the kilesas, you know, to bring up, you know, in fiery memories or exciting memories and then tell us, see, you know, your Dhamma practice doesn't get anywhere, you have to go now to the beach or in the mountains or climb a mountain or whatever. then Dhamma is using then the Kilesas are using memory. If Dhamma is using memory, then say, oh, I had, you know, just 2 or 3 weeks or maybe 3 or 4 years ago, my practice was going good. Why did I forget this good thing? Let me bring it up again. And then you see, okay, what did I do? Okay, I just concentrated on the word Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. I wasn't interested in anything else, and then I dropped in the state of samadhi. Ah, and why did you forget it for the last 3 years? Well, because you wanted something. You wanted to achieve, the Kilesas wanted to achieve something. They wanted to be a sotapanna, or they wanted to go into samadhi, or they wanted to train the jhanas, or whatever. Never forget, huh? The five khandhas, including the body, including the senses, including memory and feeling, including associations and thought and consciousness, is a toolbox. Whoever is in charge, I mean, can use the tools for its own purpose. And most of the time, avijja is in charge of our toolbox. So what we see is through the eyes of avijja. What we hear is through the eyes of avijja. What we feel is through the eyes of avijja. What we think is through the eyes of avijja. What we memorize is through the power of avijja. And that's why it's so extremely difficult, because everything what we think about ourselves, you know, how clever we are, or how stupid we are, how fortunate we are, or how unfortunate we are, is always the way of the Kilesa. Dhamma doesn't think in this way. Dhamma doesn't know if to be victorious or to be defeated. Dhamma just is. I just heard yesterday the talk of Tanaka where he talks about it. And we constantly forget it. Dhamma is not courageous. Kilesas can be courageous. Dhamma just is. And that is for us the most difficult thing, just to be. I was writing this I mean, to be or not to be, that was Shakespeare, you know. But there was a psychologist in the 60s who, I mean, but, to be. That is the most difficult thing for us. We always want something for our own possession. That's why we take. Asia is a little bit different. It's more being in line or in nature. But Western standard is, you know, what I want, you know, I take for myself, you know, I put it in my room, and I'm the only one who can watch it until the flower dies. And then I get the next one. Yeah? That's why we don't have so much flowers. We just take everything that we want for ourselves and lock it up. And take it as our possession. And if somebody else wants to look at it, you know, we hit him on the head. Because we don't like to look at our things. That's the Western approach. So, if we practice, and if that will be in our back of our mind, that there are two sides of our citta, or two main aspects of our citta. That's the aspect of avijja, who is in charge of our five khandhas, or is it the Dhamma who is in charge of the five khandhas? I mean, just sitting through pain, I mean, the Kilesas are in charge. Because they tell us there is pain, that is too much, or I'm going to break my leg, or I'm going to break my back, or I'm ruining my body for good. I mean, Dhamma doesn't say things like that. It just knows, that's it. But it also knows when to stop. It knows the borders, it knows the limits, you know, it knows it. But because we cannot come to this knowing, that's why it's difficult for us, that's why we have to judge it, yeah? Judge it by the guidelines. If you could come to this knowingness, it would be fine. We would know what is proper and not proper. I mean, the person who has sati, one moment of sati, also tenets a mahabhava sati. There are no kilesas. That means, okay. That's it. That's the way it is. Have sati, and the kilesas are, out power, of not in power. So, don't have sati, the kilesas are. And that makes, of course, the whole business of practice extremely difficult. Because in the beginning we just don't know. I mean, we just don't know what Dhamma is. What is Dhamma? Dhamma is. It's always there. It has always been there. It just is there, residing. But we have to dig our way down to it, just to be. Just to be. And that's why we train our. That's why we train samadhi, to get the mind clear, to clear the mind out of its thoughts and memories, so that we can have breathe through, constantly in the smog, breathing all this debris from the exhaust pipes of the houses and of the cars. I mean, the moment we go out and we go in the mountainous areas and climb up a little bit above the smog, we know what fresh air is like. And then it will be the same thing, the moment, the first time we enter in Upachara Samadhi. Wow, that was something. And then, we drop out and we want to go back into it. And that's where the difficulty lies, because we want too much. And because of our wanting, we forget to do the work of Buddha. Because that was what was bringing us in first place to Samadhi. Just observing the breath at the tip of the nose. So, I offer this for your consideration and for your reflection. Don't forget it, it's easy to forget the good thing, and then it is most of the time we remember all this bad stuff.